I'm Natalie Liu, and you're listening to the Baggage Reclaim Sessions. Hello, hello. How are you doing? When you become aware of somebody's fear, how do you feel and behave in response? One of our closest friends is terrified of dogs, so it means that when she comes over, Chester is limited in where he can go, or he sometimes spends the night with our dog walker. While it's not the most convenient thing, I don't have a problem with it because she's clearly afraid and it's the trade-off of having her visit. But when we had a barbecue last summer, our one and only, I might add, thanks to England's very ropey, unpredictable weather, Chester did get out a couple of times because some of the younger kids were goofing about with him. As a result, she felt a bit unsettled. Towards the end of the evening, a heated debate opened up after a friend of my husband's started therapizing her reaction to the dog. And the guys in the group, including her own partner, as well as M, my husband, they all started chipping in with their two cents on her fear of the dog. Now, the combo of her fear and a boatload of Prosecco between the lot of them meant that this did not go down well and an argument ensued. She had said that she would like to experiment with spending more time around the dog. Unlike the others, I hadn't taken that literally, nor had I expected that it would happen straight away or at the party with a bunch of people, some of them who were acquaintances. My reasoning with all of this, and that is the subject of today's show, is that it's not really for me to question her fear. It was about respecting that she was afraid. Even if we don't fear the same thing, we all have experience of being afraid of something, sometimes a number of things, sometimes a lot of things, and yes, sometimes irrationally so. To claim that we're not scared of anything at all is either a lie, or we're saying that the part of our brain that handles fear isn't fully functioning. It's not for us to question or belittle another person's fear of something. How can we say what is reasonable about someone else's fear? Even if we feared the same thing, our experience is different. We each have our own personality, characteristics, circumstances, resources, level of abundance, backstory, hopes, fears, dreams, motivations, body, stuff, etc. We might be able to identify with aspects of another person's experience, aka empathy. However, we can't claim that their experience is the same as ours or use our experience to dictate their emotional response and attitude. When we conflate being able to get over or do something with mind over matter, strength of character, resilience, good upbringing, education, we overstep boundaries. Sometimes that will be other people's and sometimes it will be our own. So going back to the barbecue, the person who basically started the whole thing said that he'd just got over alcohol addiction and reliance on pills with sheer willpower, and then went into a monologue about how he doesn't get how people become alcoholics or drug addicts. You know, I was side-eyeing him. I was like, mate, have a seat. There are at least a few people here besides myself who are adult children of alcoholics or who've had alcohol or drugs affect family members. Whether it's wide sweeping claims and generalizations about something or criticizing a person's strength or background or whatever it might be, that's over the line, and it can be triggering for the person on the receiving end of it. It's not about pussyfooting around people. Let's just make that clear. Because you know that there's somebody probably listening to this going, yeah, but what are you trying to say? That I've now got to tiptoe around the fact that they're afraid of whatever? No. But we do need to have some respect and not use the story we want to tell ourselves about our own experiences as something to beat others over the head about or to make ourselves superior. We also don't get to say that someone should be less afraid because, you know, we're not one of the bad ones. We're not a bad guy. We're a good person. Or that, you know, we haven't done anything wrong or we've been so loving. This is something I come across a lot. A common scenario is, let's imagine that we are in a romantic relationship with somebody who expresses that they are afraid of commitment, that they don't feel ready, I don't know, for a relationship or to go on to the next step, whatever it is that we're proposing. Now, what so many of us do in that situation is in that moment, we make what they've expressed about us. And then we go into an auditioning mode where we're now proving ourselves and campaigning for things to go the way that we want them to, for this person to basically change their emotional state, to change their habits. And when we do this, not only have we failed to listen to and respect what that person is saying, but we've also failed to maintain our emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual boundaries. It's not that when somebody turns around and expresses that they have some fears around commitment or intimacy or whatever it is, that we should be like, okay, well, see you, I'm going to jump ship. Unless, of course, that's what the situation calls for. But what it does require is for us to step back in the sense of not making things about us and really seeing and hearing what that person is saying. It is about acknowledging, actually, we have a problem here. One of us, for instance, wants to proceed and deepen the intimacy and commitment, and the other doesn't, or is certainly very afraid of doing so. That means that technically, we both want different things, which means that at this time, regardless of whatever else we both say that we have in common, we're incompatible. Now, we could then also consider, well, given that this is what the situation is, that this is what the person is expressing, what would supporting this person look like? So it's like, if I love and care about this person in the way I say that I do, and I want what's in the highest good for each of us, even if that means that it might result in us going our separate ways, what does supporting this person look like? So I can stay without trying to fix them or their problem. I can stay in my own lane. I can, of course, for instance, suggest couples counseling, but it cannot be with the aim of making the person come around to my way of thinking. It's actually about figuring out what's right for the relationship, what's right for each of us, not about making this person do what I want to fit my agenda. In these situations, we can ask the person what it is that they think that they need. Their answer might surprise us. So in this fear of commitment situation, they might express something that actually turns out to be workable and boundaried, in that they already have a sense of what the issue is and are already on their way to addressing it, for instance, via therapy or counseling. And so maybe they're asking for a little time. Emotional availability and commitment to self are two of the four qualities of a loving partner or person. This is something I talk about in episode 109, which I will link to in the show notes, which will be at baggagereclaim.co.uk/252. Part of these qualities is about utilizing self-awareness and self-knowledge, about who we've been before and are now. And this includes recognition of what has affected us in our previous relationships and having a more truthful, boundaried sense of why those relationships didn't work out. That means that in this situation, this person's answer might convey that they are actually endeavoring to embody these qualities. Now, obviously, if the person's like, just give me a week, I just need a week, give me 10 days, give me 2 weeks, give me a month. As well-intentioned as that might be, they're buying time and they're deluding themselves as well as us. What's going to change in a week? Especially like they're not really saying what they're going to do with that time. Say, like, just give me a week, just give me, nah, buying time. Now, of course, in this situation, when we ask what this person needs, it might become clear that we're going to actually become subsumed by this person's fear and that we're compromising ourselves. So it's like, give me 3 months, and then it's 6, and then it's 9 months, and then it's 12 months, and then it's 5 years. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, but I have a friend who, when I first met her, she was 18 months into what would become a 10-year relationship. And when I first met her, he was already expressing his fear of commitment, his reservations about getting married and all the rest. Over that decade, he dragged it out. He was one of those people who's like, yeah, I'm afraid of commitments, and it's about this. And so whatever that thing was that he expressed, whatever he said was the problem, when that was gone, another one would sprout up. You know, it's like a game of whack-a-mole. And so it was like, yeah, well, you know, I do want to commit. You know, I am afraid, but, you know, I'd love to move in, but, you know, you just don't have enough space for my stuff. There's not enough storage. She spent thousands of pounds on these fancy built-in wardrobes, various other bits of storage and furniture around her home. He just found something else. There was always something. And eventually, after a decade of this malarkey, she was like, yeah, I am out. It could be that the person turns around and says, you know, I need you like to not talk about your feelings. I need you like to never like mention this subject. And look, I get it. As humans, sometimes we have certain subjects that feel a bit hot to the touch, a little bit out of bounds. However, when we're in this situation where this person's saying that they're afraid of commitment and they're like, yeah, well, that look you gave me or that thing you said, you know, that's making me feel pressured, they're asking too much of us. They really are. We're going to end up compromising ourselves because we're going to feel as if we have to constantly silence ourselves for this person to feel comfortable. And while that person is feeling comfortable in their fear, what they're not experiencing is enough discomfort about the situation to actually address it. And in those situations, their expectations, the manner of asserting what their needs are, might really further underscore the fact that actually we're incompatible. And an example of this actually is that sometimes those expectations might be pretty outrageous in the sense of we turn around and we're like, okay, so what is it that you need? And they turn around and say, do you know what? I think I need to like see other people. I think I need to start sleeping around and dating again. Now, it's one thing if that's what we want to do too, but it's another thing when what has happened is that 1 minute it's being made out like, oh yeah, you know, we're in this relationship and now we're talking about moving a relationship forward. And this person then turns around and it's like, yeah, do you know what? I hear your expression of a desire for commitment and I raise you an open relationship. That's the chips that I'm laying down here. That's what I want. And of course, that's not going to work because what we realize yet again there is that we are incompatible. Now, regardless of whatever a fear is that someone expresses, and understandably, some of those fears will come across as being irrational. What we can't do, and it is what so many of us do, is be like, but I've been a good girl, I've been a good guy, I've been a good person, or I've done everything you want. So why the bleep are you still afraid? Where's my commitment at? Where's whatever it's at? What are you afraid for? And then on top of that, the next trap that we fall into is, okay, well, I've done all of these things. They're afraid. Okay, let me throw my goodness at it. Because what we're really doing when we approach a situation with this kind of thinking and attitude and behavior, we're disrespecting that person's boundaries to avoid confronting our own fears, to avoid registering and accepting the information that we're receiving so that we can take the necessary action, so that we can have the appropriate boundaries for us. And so we're actually breaching our own boundaries at the same time as well. So what if we've been good? What the hell has that got to do with the other person's feelings? And I say this as somebody who is a recovering people pleaser, because I tell you something, I recognize with the benefit of hindsight, and you know what, I learned this lesson many times in life, that my psychic pain, the struggles that I have experienced, right, has come about from the sense of trying to control other people's feelings and behavior by pleasing them in some way, and then feeling confused, anxious, resentful, outraged, depressed, helpless, powerless, you name it, all the people pleaser feelings, when they don't feel the way that I want them to feel, when they don't act the way that I want them to act. I am somebody who has used pushing myself really hard, not expressing too many needs, trying to be the best, trying to give at least 100% as a way to try to please people and to also avoid undesirable outcomes. And then when life doesn't go the way that I want it to, when people do things different to the way that I would, I'm like, yeah, but I've been good. I've done this. When I'm frustrated, I don't know, with work or something, it's like, yeah, but I've done these good things. I'm a good person, blah, blah. This is a pattern that I learned. Nothing wrong with me. We've all been socialized and conditioned into people pleasing to some extent. And part of my journey in life, part of our journey in adulthood, is recognizing patterns that are not working for us and unlearning them. And so we are doing ourselves a disservice when we make somebody else's inner world, somebody else's habits, even somebody else's behavior about us, about how good we are, because it's got nothing whatsoever to do with that. And, you know, here's another way that this can play out. You see this mentality in action when, for instance, we're parents and our child says that they're afraid of something. And sometimes our first thought is, oh my God, I thought I was a good parent. Or what we might try to do is railroad them into things because we remember what it was like to be afraid and we don't want them to miss out on things. Or we think of ourselves as having been this fearless child when we were younger. And maybe we think of somebody else that we know that we thought was fearful of stuff. And we're like, oh my God, I don't want my kid to be like that. We need to have a seat. We need to take our ego out of things and try to see the child, the person in front of us. People are allowed to be afraid of something, and that includes us. We don't need to tell ourselves or others to buck up, to grow a pair, or that it's not a big deal. Nor do we need to go to the opposite end and agree that it's the most terrifying thing on earth. And this is where we can ask ourselves my favorite question on this show since episode 2, what's the baggage behind it? So where else have we felt, thought, and acted similarly? It's actually about recognizing where our judgment comes from, including whether our judgment of other people's fears is partly about judgment of our own fear, or about where others have judged us. Because then we can become more conscious, aware, and present. We can come from a place of love, care, trust, and respect for us as well as for the other person. I think sometimes part of our judgment can actually come from putting people on pedestals. And so there they are, and we're like, oh my God, this person's like so amazing. And then they turn around and they express something that basically represents their fear. And it's like this illusion of perfection. All the stuff that we've built around them comes crashing down. And we feel angry that this person has disappointed us with their humanness. In other instances, sometimes our judgments of other people's fear actually comes from us seeing ourselves as being the same or similar to this person. And so when this person turns around and they struggle with something, when they express that they're afraid of something, suddenly it feels like it calls our own identity into question. Because, of course, we've built this whole story around how me and you were brethren. Me and you were the same. And yeah, we may have similarities with this person, but going back to what I said earlier, that doesn't mean that we can call it on everything that they think, feel, and do, because they are an entirely separate person with a whole inner world, with a whole backstory, a whole person that differs from ours. Recognizing and respecting somebody's fear also doesn't mean that we have to pander to it or breach our own boundaries and well-being to accommodate it. And so many people do fall into this trap with their interpersonal relationships. And they pussyfoot around the other person's fears. They build an entire relationship around that and compromise themselves so significantly that it's not possible for it to be a mutually fulfilling relationship. And instead, there's a lot of guilt and resentment and fear and shame. And what we can do in those situations is, if we recognize that we are, to some degree, walking on eggshells around someone else's fear, we can ask ourselves, well, what is it that I am not saying or being or doing as a result of what I think I know about that person's fear? Because that will tell us about where we've come out of alignment with our values, where we've come out of alignment with our boundaries. We will see where we are compromising ourselves in some way. And no genuinely healthy relationship, no relationship where, regardless of whatever struggles each person has, the two people want, you know, love, care, trust, and respect for both, requires anyone to be compromising themselves. Recognizing and respecting somebody else's fear is actually really about starting from a place of recognizing that this person has their own position and that it differs from ours. Empathy. This is far better than coming from this place of, I'm right and you're wrong, I'm better, or I know everything, what do you know, you're irrational. We can respect someone else's fear without being ruled by it. If, with the benefit of hindsight, we realize that we were, insensitive, or that we overstepped when someone expressed their fear, we can acknowledge and apologize. That guy from the barbecue, he woke up the following day, hung over to the teeth, and mortified over some of the comments he'd made. And he wasted no time getting on the phone and apologizing, endeavoring to make things right. And you know that M woke up to me side-eyeing him the following morning about some of the comments that he and our friend's partner were making, you know, during this conversation. And we talked about all of that, and he apologized to her, you know, because he wanted to. They have been friends since they were 16 years old. So it was all cool. And it was very much a learning moment, actually, really, for everyone who was there. Ultimately, respecting other people's fear or fears is about accepting it instead of making it about us or judging the person. We don't have to get it to accept it. This is another person expressing their understanding of themselves and the world at this moment. Rather than judge the person, judge the situation. What, if anything, does it mean about that situation? Because then, coming from that place of respect and acceptance means that we can treat us and them with love, care, trust, and respect. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time, and take care of you. Thanks so much for listening to the Baggage Reclaim Sessions. If you'd like to say hi, or you want to let me know what you thought of an episode or of the show in general, or you'd like to suggest a topic, the best place to get a hold of me is on Instagram. I'm at Nat Lou. That's N-A-T FLUE. You can find links to it and my other social channels in the show notes at baggagereclaim.co.uk/252. There is a full list of episodes at baggagereclaim.co.uk/podcast. And if you've enjoyed the show and you haven't done so already, I would love it if you could subscribe in whichever podcast player that you're listening in. And if you could take another moment to rate and review the show, that would also be fab, because it all helps with spreading the word. The Baggage Reclaim Sessions doesn't feature external advertising. So if you're enjoying what I share on here and you'd like to support, you can do so by checking out the blog. I have classes, I have courses, and I've also got my books and audio series. And you can find all of these on the main website at baggagereclaim.co.uk or .com.